May 8, 1902. That date may not mean much to you, but that was the day that marked the end for about 30,000 people who lived on the French island of Martinique in the Mediterranean. There was a disaster there at 8:02 on that day. The volcano Mount Pelee erupted. In the morning, your people were observing the fireworks that were being displayed by the mountain. The night shift telegraph operator was sending reports about the volcano's activity to another operator in France, claiming that there was no significant new development. And his last transmission just said, "Alex," and that was handing over the line to the next operator. And the next second, the telegraph line went dead. A cable repair ship had the city in view from a distance, and they saw that the mountainside of this volcano ripped open, and there was a dense black cloud that went out horizontally. There were two black clouds that rolled upwards, and it formed a giant mushroom cloud. And it was said that it darkened the sky in about 50-mile radius. And the speed of both clouds was later calculated to be about 420 miles per hour. You would think that something like that would, an eruption like that, and the loss of life that took place, it was rather unexpected, but it really wasn't that unexpected. Consider this timeline that took place before May 8, 1902. A few weeks before, on April 23rd, there was a light rain of cinders together with sharp underground shocks. You know, if it started raining cinders, that'd be pretty unique, wouldn't it? On April 25th, rocks and ashes blew from the crater at the mountaintop that really did no damage to anyone. On April 26th, there was volcanic ash that came from a mini eruption, but the officials said, you know, don't worry about it. It's not a danger. April 27th, there was a huge lake that was found on the top of the mountain. You could hear it boiling. And a 50-foot cone of volcanic debris was built up on one side, and the island really smelled like sulfur. A few days later, on April 30th, two rivers that were close by were carrying boulders and trees from the mountaintop, and local villages were receiving steady streams of ash. On May 2nd, there were loud explosions and earthquakes. There was a black pillar of smoke. Half of the island was covered in ash, and there were animals that died due to the food and water contamination. On May the 5th, the volcano calmed down, and the sea receded about 330 feet. And then suddenly, the sea rushed back, and it caused major flooding. There was more smoke. A wall of the crater collapsed. There was water and mud that flowed out, and about 150 people died. On May 6th, there were loud sounds that came from the mountain, and the electric grid was disabled. And then on May 7th, the day before the volcano erupted, there were clouds of ash, volcanic lightning. Some people fled the island. Others moved into the city to seek refuge, where officials said that it was all safe. So when you think about the 30,000 people that died on May 8th, and you look back to 2 weeks before, there were lots of signs there that something bad was happening. That there was a lot of warning there. A disaster could have been avoided, but you know, people trusted officials, and it reminds me sometimes of how people treat, you know, hurricane warnings down on the beach. Oh, we're going to ride it out, and although that there's plenty of warning. So people sometimes ignore realities of situations, and they ignore signs, or maybe they don't understand them, and people don't act with urgency. In the Bible, we read about a man who ignored the reality of his situation. He dismissed signs. He refused to act with urgency, and that was Pharaoh, king of Egypt. His actions resulted in a lot of misery and ruin and death. He was holding on to the Hebrew people, the Israelites. They were slaves in Egypt. Rex read some about what he was having them do, and because of the persecution that they were undergoing, God sent Moses to tell him to let the people go, to tell Pharaoh to let the people go, and Pharaoh refused. And as a result, God sent plagues on Egypt. The first plague was the water turning to blood. And now, in Exodus chapter 8, verses 5 through 11, we see that there's frogs. Let's read Exodus chapter 8, and we'll start in verse 1. This is actually supposed to be the scripture reading tonight, but got a little bit of background from you. I gave you the wrong verse. Exodus chapter 8, 1 through 11. The Lord said to Moses, "Go unto Pharaoh and say to him, Thus says the Lord, let my people go, that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will plague all your country with frogs. The Nile shall swarm with frogs that shall come up into your house and into your bedroom and on your bed and in the houses of your servants and your people and into your ovens and your kneading bowls. The frogs shall come up on you and on your people and all your servants." And the Lord said to Moses, "Say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, over the canals, over the pools, and make frogs come up on the land of Egypt." So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. But the magicians did the same by their secrets and made frogs come up on the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Moses and Aaron and said, "Plead with the Lord to take away the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go to sacrifice to the Lord." Moses said to Pharaoh, "Be pleased to command me when I am to plead for you and your servants and for your people, that the frogs be cut off from you and your houses and only be left in the Nile." And he said, "Tomorrow." Moses said, "Be it as you say, so that you may know that there is no one like the Lord our God. The frogs shall go away from you and your houses and your servants and your people. They shall only be left in the Nile." So Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried out to the Lord about the frogs, as he had agreed with Pharaoh. And the Lord did according to the word of Moses. The frogs died out in the houses, the courtyards, and the fields. And they gathered them together in heaps, and the land stank. But when Pharaoh saw that there was a respite, he hardened his heart and would not listen to them, as the Lord said. So this plague here, you know, resulting in the frogs, you just picture the scene. And I know some of you ladies just don't want to picture the scene, probably. But, you know, picture, there's frogs everywhere. They're not the cute little kinds of frog. You know, that's a cute frog. And this one's even cuter, isn't it? A little tree frog. And they're probably more like this one. You know, big, ugly frog, or like that one. Big, mean looking. But, you know, these are big... I'm just going to say these are the big nasty ones. These are the big nasty frogs that you're not going to want to see. Frogs in the yard, frogs in the bed, frogs in the toilet, frogs in the cabinets, frogs in the food, frogs in the water, frogs in your clothes, frogs in your hair. Everywhere you look, you see frogs. Everywhere you step on frogs. And when you step on frogs, they make a mess. Frogs everywhere. But what I want you to see is Pharaoh's response. He says, you know, one more night with the frogs. You know, he says, tomorrow. Tomorrow. We can have one more night with the frogs. But he had a chance to get rid of them. When Moses is talking to him, he says, you know, when do you want me to take care of this? He says, tomorrow. That's unbelievable to me. Why would he want to wait? Why wait? But as a result, what we see is that his heart hardens, and what happens is there are 8 more plagues that come. And as a result, his own son dies. Now, all that could have been prevented. Pharaoh says, tomorrow. His reaction here is really kind of mind-blowing, but it really shouldn't be. It's the same way that sometimes people respond to the gospel of Christ. People choose to spend one more night with the frogs of sin when the remedy is right there in front of them. People say, tomorrow, and they live with the result. So I want to talk with you tonight about what it means to spend one more night with the frogs.
One more night with the frogs means spending one more unnecessary night with our sin. When Pharaoh said tomorrow, he was choosing really pointlessly to keep all those frogs around. Maybe it didn't bother him as much as it bothered everybody else. But, you know, frogs were everywhere. They were still coming. And, you know, they're messy. And the dead bodies of the frogs are piling up. But, you know,
and there's more that are coming up to replace those. You know, it's just a big mess. And what was true about tomorrow was that it's just going to continue this big mess. What is going to change in Egypt to make it better for Pharaoh to wait? Why would it make, what's making it worth 24 more hours of frogs? You know, Pharaoh could have had all this removed immediately, but he chose not to. And it's just making a big, stinky mess. And it's the same way in our lives, in the lives of those who don't submit to the gospel, don't submit to the Word of God. They really make things a mess in their life because they don't take care of things at the outset, and things get worse and worse. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 27 and 28. Proverbs 6, 27 and 28. Can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burned? Or can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? I've never tried that. I know there's people that do walk on coals, and it seems kind of silly to me, and I've seen people try it that really didn't know what they were doing and then later regretted it. And so the wise writer is saying you can't play with sin and say it doesn't affect you. It's going to affect you. That is the message of the wise writer. Just like Egypt stunk and it was filthy because of the frog, you know, our lives get filled with filth because of sin. It's destructive, it's corrupting, and it makes just a personal mess of us inside and out. When people get involved in sin, it makes a mess in their hearts and their minds. It ties up their thoughts, emotions, and their feelings, and their intentions. And, you know, how many times people are tempted to sin and they give into it, and later on they say, if I just hadn't given into that, it would not have made such a mess of my mind. But when they do those things, it makes them remember that sin. It's hard for them to get over. And if they had just never given into it in the first place, it would have made it so much easier to stay faithful. Sin makes a mess of relationships. We end up hurting others. We end up breaking trust. We end up disappointing one another. And the bad decisions and the negative consequences, it makes a mess of our daily lives. So that's the effect that sin has on us. I think it was Dee Bowman that is credited with saying that sin takes you farther than you meant to go, keeps you longer than you meant to stay, and costs you more than you meant to pay. I hear that quoted quite often. Dee Bowman's the first one I heard say that. And what that means is don't deceive yourself. It's not going to bring you what you thought it was. Sin brings heartache, and it is going to be a big problem, and it's not going to be the pleasurable thing that you thought it was going to be in the long run, because it brings heartache and sorrow, regrets, guilt, and shame. And when we spend one more night with sin or one more night with the frogs, then we continue in ruin needlessly. And there can be freedom from that if it is taken care of. Another thing that it does is, you know, keeping sin around longer than necessary, it just means we carry the weight of sin's guilt longer and longer. We carry around the weight of guilt of sin longer than is necessary. Jesus has given us a remedy for that. And of course, Moses was giving, you know, Pharaoh an opportunity. If Pharaoh had just responded, there was a lot of damage that could have been avoided. A lot of things that people had to suffer that would not have had to have been suffered. the guilt of sin is something that weighs upon us. And if we're in the situation where we haven't obeyed the gospel, we have to understand how grave that situation is, that those sins are still on our record. You don't enjoy the forgiveness of sins. You don't have anything to look forward to. You're outside of the grace and mercy of God. You can't go on sinning willfully and expect everything to be okay. Instead of being dead, we can be alive spiritually, as Paul said in Colossians chapter 2. So it's not that it's not a problem of not having opportunity. It's a problem of not taking advantage of the opportunity. We have to decide what we are going to do. Are we going to continue to delay? In Jeremiah chapter 8, verses 20 through 22, the prophet says, "The harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved. For the wound of the daughter of my people is my heart wounded. I mourn, and dismay has taken hold on me. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? Why then has the health of the daughters of my people not been restored?" It's a lament that things are not taken care of. That God stands ready and eager to heal us, but people that can be healed don't take advantage of it. So when Pharaoh says, "You know, just one more night with the frog, let's do this tomorrow," he's made a poor decision. And what we see is that doing this allowed his heart to grow callous. When he put this off, it's a decision that gave him the opportunity to think about what it is he's going to do. And it says his heart was hardened. And he decided, "Well, I was going to let him go, but now I'm not going to anymore." We see that cycle repeated over and over with Pharaoh. It was a pivotal decision for Pharaoh. And this procrastination and defiance, it just keeps making it easier for him to say no to God later on. You know, when the water turned to blood in Exodus chapter 7, it indicates that, you know, that Pharaoh really didn't even pay attention to that. Look back at chapter 7 and verse 23. Chapter 7, verse 23, it says, "Pharaoh turned and went into his house. He did not even take this to heart." Just basically ignored that. But now, when it's the frog, he says, "Well, you know, tomorrow." He sounds like he's considerate. It sounds like he's moving at least a little. I'm sure that many of the people that don't like the frogs are having a little bit to say about it. But he still has made no decision, and his heart becomes hardened. And now he comes back, and he is resolute that he's not going to submit to God. He procrastinates, then his heart hardens, and he refuses to obey, and then his heart hardens more. By saying tomorrow, he's developed a habit of saying no. And people do the same thing today. Many people that are not Christians, and even those that are, they get involved in sin, and they keep doing things that are against God's will, and the first time that they do it, maybe it bothers them a little bit, and they keep doing it, and they're no longer hardened to it. 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 2 says, "Through the insecurity of liars whose consciences are seared." Searing your conscience means that it no longer has any feeling. And some of us probably have scar tissue. And if you touch the scar tissue, you know, you really don't have any feeling there anymore because the nerves are damaged. And yeah, that's what it means to sear. And it does not have the effect anymore that it should. It does not respond to stimulus. And your conscience is seared. It does not respond anymore. Paul is talking about the people who've done the wrong thing long enough that their conscience no longer bothers them. It's been burned by sin so that there's no longer any feeling left. And sometimes that happens. We see that and we wonder, how can somebody do that? How can somebody keep doing evil things? Doesn't that bother their conscience? How can they sleep at night? Well, they can sleep because they keep doing it over and over, and it doesn't bother their conscience anymore. And every time we tell ourselves, "Well, tomorrow I'll do something about it," you know, we kind of diminish that voice. Our conscience may be bothering us, but when we say no, we keep searing that conscience. We keep putting things off, and the likelihood that we will take advantage of the time that God has given us becomes more and more unlikely. We need to respond, and I believe that there is a direct parallel between how we respond and how Pharaoh responded. When we say no to God, or even, well, not now, I'm going to do it later, our hearts become hardened. And Hebrews chapter 3 talks about hearts becoming hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Again, that goes back to sin promising something that is good and is really bad. And with each refusal to obey God, we just keep taking steps away from Him. And it gets easier and easier to say no. And Satan's lies become more and more believable. And the longer that you keep this sin around in your life, the more defiled your conscience becomes. We see that sometimes when children or even adults are around people who use bad language or they tell filthy jokes or whatever, and a child will say something and will say, "Well, where did you hear such a thing?" Well, they've heard it over and over that it becomes part of their language. And if they're young, they may not realize that that was something that they shouldn't say because they picked it up from somebody else. And then you tell them that's really not something that you should say and correct them on it. But then they keep hearing those things on TV. They keep hearing them from others. And it becomes more and more of something that's in their head. Even if it doesn't come out of their mouth, they hear when people react to something, these words come out of their mouth. And how often those words pop into our head. It's because we have become desensitized to it, or it becomes so commonplace to hear these things. And of course, there's words that have crept into our language that when I was growing up, we wouldn't say, but now those words have become more common. And so the more you keep staying around in your life, the more you are around those kind of stimulus, it becomes more and more easy for you to be affected by it. And then what is right and wrong really becomes blurred in the minds of some people. In Titus chapter 1, verse 15, it says, "To the pure, all things are pure, but to the defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure, but both their minds and their consciences are defiled." We don't want our consciences to become defiled. We want our consciences to direct us in the right way. So the answer to that is obedience in Jesus Christ. The answer is submission to Christ. And so we can take action, as 1 Peter chapter 3 tells us, that we can have a good conscience. Baptism is the appeal to a good conscience, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 21. And one more night with the frogs means that you are just taking unnecessary risk with our souls. It means taking a necessary eternal risk with our souls. You think a moment about all the heartache and ruin that could have been avoided if Pharaoh had just said, "Okay, well, let's take care of this right now," instead of tomorrow. That night, I don't know how many people slept. I know Jarrell wouldn't have if they're frog hopping all over. Or even if they were outside and you could hear them, they're croaking at the door. They're wanting to come in. I've got to keep them away from me. The croaks of millions of frogs would have been deafening. Not to mention that sensation of them crawling on you. The frogs contaminated the water, the food supply, and that's very descriptive in the way that it is described in Exodus. They're in their bowls. They're in the food, they're everywhere. And there had to be disease as well, especially when the dead ones were piling up. And I really can't believe that people didn't revolt against Pharaoh. They're all suffering because of his bad leadership and his decisions. And he could have fixed it. But he didn't. And so, as a result, bad leader, we're having to suffer with frogs, we're having to sleep with frogs because of you. But what came after this? I don't know which one of these plagues that I would like better than the other. I don't really care for any of them. Lice. Flies. Maybe in the South we could deal with the flies a little bit, but not in the way that we see it described here. disease of livestock, boils, hail mingled with fire, locusts. You think you don't like frogs crawling on you? Think about locusts hopping all over you. Darkness, and the worst, the death of the firstborn. You know, Egypt was really turned into a wasteland. And Pharaoh, did he know the risk? Well, you know, he should have. It's been described to him. He's already said no. He saw the water turn into blood. He said no. He ignored that. He's faced with the frogs. He says, well, let me think about it. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Then he changes his mind. He is taking unnecessary risks. And so Pharaoh's procrastination with his frogs really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Maybe it makes a little more sense than what people play around with today, though. When people play around with sin today, when we procrastinate with sin, it has eternal consequences. And people really don't know how much time they have left. I don't know how many of you have ever been driving and gotten sleepy. I guess everybody has. Isn't that a scary feeling when you realize that you know, for a moment you really didn't lose consciousness, but your brain disengaged for a second or a few seconds, and then something makes you wake back up and you realize, oh, I've got to pull over. I've got to go to Starbucks. I've got to do something to keep myself awake. Or you start hitting yourself in the face to wake yourself up. And, you know, that fear of having a wreck may keep you awake a little bit. You know, that's a very scary thing. We don't know how much time we have. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 and 2 says, working together with Him, then we appeal to you not to receive the grace of God in vain. For He says, in a favorable time I listened to you, in a day of salvation I have helped you. Behold, now is the favorable time. Behold, it's the day of salvation. This is telling us that we don't need to wait. We don't need to procrastinate with sin. Forgiveness and obeying the gospel is something that needs to be done immediately. And when we procrastinate with things that impact our eternity, it's a very serious thing. You know, if I go to sleep at the wheel because I haven't gotten enough rest, you know, or I'm not being responsible, you know, that may be my responsibility. You know, but there may be somebody on the other side of the road that's just as sleepy as I am. I may be wide awake and they're not, and they're the one that swerves off the road and hits me. Now, there's all kinds of dangers out there. We don't know, and we hear things all the time about people that lose their life. And we're all going to lose our life. Everybody here will at one time or another. And so the question is, do you believe in heaven? And do you believe in hell? Do you believe the Bible that talks about both of those places? And if you do believe that, do you really want to take a risk about which place that you're going to? It's not just about, you know, Pharaoh sleeping with the frogs one more night. You know, that's really not a big consideration in the grand scheme of things for him to tolerate frogs one more day. But when we think about what we play around with, it's much more serious. We're talking about eternity. Procrastination has eternal consequences. And when we procrastinate with salvation, we make our eternal destiny uncertain. And perhaps one day I'll be saved. Perhaps tomorrow I'll take care of some things that I've been knowing that I need to take care of. But the one thing that we can say for sure is today's not the day. If we're putting it off, you know, today I'm not ready. And what you're saying is right now I'm not saved. If you know there's something you need to do and you're putting it off, what you're saying is right now I'm not saved. To say tomorrow is to say not today. And to put off your salvation is to remain lost until you take care of that. James chapter 4 tells us that
when we say tomorrow, we're really ignoring the reality of the uncertainty of life. James talks about our life as being uncertain. He talks about it as being a vapor. You know, when we get up early in the morning some times of the year and we see the fog and we can hardly see to drive, you know, but if you wait a half an hour, it's all dissipated. It's gone. And I know that all of us could stand here and tell emotional stories about people who lost their lives unexpectedly. But the Bible talks about that. The Bible talks about uncertainty of life. It's uncertain because life could end at any point. It's also uncertain because Jesus could return at any point. He'll come back as a thief in the night. It'll be unexpected. So what are we doing when we know what we need to do to be right and we're playing Russian roulette with our souls? You know, when people are young, you know, they have what we would call the Superman complex. Sometimes we say Ethan has that. Because, you know, everything that he does, I think he's been hurt just about every year at camp, because everything he does full out.
Yeah.
When he's involved in sports, he's given it 100%, and a lot of times that means he's going to get injured. I mean, he heals up pretty nicely most of the time, but sometimes that's the case with young people. They have this indestructible Superman complex, and then, you know, people get older and they get busy, they put things off. Even at middle age, sometimes people think they have plenty of time. And when people get older, they say, well, you know, I'm too old to change. They really should have changed a long time ago. And I guess one of the biggest reasons why people say tomorrow is that they convince themselves that their excuses are real reasons. And I'm sure Pharaoh had his reasons too, but they were just excuses. And sometimes people make excuses about the gospel. They say, well, I'm not good enough. I don't know enough. I don't have anything to offer. I have too much to change. Well, yeah, maybe a lot of those things are true. And certainly, to say I'm not good enough is exactly why we need to obey the gospel in the first place. Because none of us are righteous. And we need God's grace. And most of the time, these things are just excuses for avoiding what we know is right, and we're just putting it off. We don't need to put things off. Certainly, the story of Pharaoh and the 10 plagues is probably one of the most interesting stories that most of us have heard from the time that we were little. It makes a great Bible class and great bulletin board. But the point of that story is, number one, God's preparing His people to be released from captivity. But one of the more striking examples and things that we can learn from this is Pharaoh's foolishness in seeing something go from bad to worse to worser. I know that's not a word. But it just gets, it escalates. It gets worse and worse. But Pharaoh is not going to change. He has made his mind up, and it does, even to the point of the loss of human life, the loss of his son, he stays stubborn. The lesson for us is, how long are we going to stay stubborn? Are we going to just dig our heels in and refuse to sacrifice our pride? We can't bring ourselves to say that we're wrong. We just can't make things right with our brethren. We can't make things right with our God because we have too much pride to admit that we sin. The thing is that God knows everything that we've done. He knows that we've sinned. He's waiting for us. Just as the prodigal son had to decide to go back home, when he did that, the father was waiting for him. The father didn't come and snatch him out of the pig pen, but he made the decision to come back. When we make the decision to come to the Father, we know we have one that will welcome us with open arms, because we surrendered our pride
and we told him that I don't want to wait anymore. I want to be part of the family. I want to be accepted by you. Don't put off doing what you know that you should do. Don't be foolish like Pharaoh was and say, well, you know, tomorrow I'll do it. Well, that tomorrow never came for him. It won't come for many people that continue to procrastinate. Use the time that God has blessed you with to do what it is that you should do to be in the right relationship with Him. If we can help in any way to do that, we'd invite you to come while we stand together and sing.